Welcome to Thundercast, Thunder Tech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hello and welcome to Thundercast, Thunder Tech's regular podcast. I'm Craig Israel, creative director at Thunder Tech, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, account manager extraordinaire, Eric Krylo.
Back at it again.
Eric, we have a very special episode of Thundercast today. We just released our annual Trends publication, where we explore some of the new and emerging trends in the marketing world. And in this podcast, we're going to be doing a deeper dive into one of those topics, specifically personalization and relationship marketing. With us to help talk us through that topic are the article's authors, Bruce Williams, our Senior Director of Development Department.
Hello.
And Kyle Coughlin, our Marketing Automation Specialist.
Hello.
All right, guys. So before we jump into it and get into the nitty-gritty, why don't we start with softball? So what is personalization and relationship marketing?
So personalization relationship marketing, to break it down, is talking to your audience one-on-one. It's using information and data that you've collected about your audience and putting it to a little bit better use to really speak on that one-to-one level rather than one-to-many.
Yeah, and if I could boil it down simply, is a way for companies to create a better customer service, better customer experience, both at the buying stage and then also keeping a customer.
So an example of this, a visible example of this, is when you go to a website and the website knows your name, and it might say like, "Hey Bruce, welcome back," or you know, "Kyle, what are you looking for today?" So that seems kind of superficial. What deeper things can we learn about our customers and make for a more personalized experience?
Yeah. So data, architecture, systems, cloud, you can really scale this out, and it's a wide range of areas that you can grab data from your customer, both from implied data, purchase history. You sell online, you have a POS system, you can get their purchase history if you think through it and you architect it well enough. You could also get conversations that you have through customer service channels.
Yeah, and it's thinking about your data as a whole, not having it in these isolated silos. So the more data that you can have access to, the more knowledge that you can gather about your audience, then you can start segmenting and personalizing essentially to an infinite extent, where rather than having everything be sectioned off where your sales information is stored, you know, independently of your marketing data, and that's stored independently of your customer service data, we can start to use things like, you know, a receipt or a submission somebody had from a support standpoint ended up driving a sale down the line for the, you know, newer version of that product. We can start to connect those dots to make that customer experience just that much better down the line.
So without getting too far down the road here, I think data is really important. Mm-hmm. I think everyone would agree that the more data you have, the better decisions you can make and the more educated decisions you can make. But at the same time, I think you can get caught up in collecting too much data.
Yeah.
So for the folks out there that may, you know, once the podcast ends, be interested in something like this, Kyle, where would you suggest that they start? And if it's different per industry, if you could just give the high level of that.
It's a great question. And one thing that we do touch on in our Trends article is a few recommendations just to get the ball rolling. And one of those things is your email or newsletter sign up, where sometimes we've seen folks just ask for email address, and we've seen it all the way to the point where there's 10, 12 different fields where you're trying to gather that audience member's whole life story. And some quick areas that we can update that is eliminating all of the optional fields and getting rid of the fields that just don't really make any sense. So we can ask questions down the line that are a little bit more important, but at this point, asking for their email address, you know, possibly their zip code if location is important to you and your audience, and then one question with asking for them to identify one or two different interests that they have. So from there, we can start to segment automatically based off of those and the geographic location of them. So through three questions, we've essentially been able to create, you know, 6 to 9 different audience segments.
So you're not necessarily saying that you could have too much data about your customer. You're saying how you collect that data really matters, right?
Yeah,
if you do it all in one fell swoop, or if you do it over the lifetime of being a customer.
I would also add, what do you do with the data? What do you plan to do with the data? If you're not going to, you know, if you're a clothes manufacturer or a shoe manufacturer and you know you sell shoes by the size and you want to target by the size,
I thought you were going to say by the seashore.
By the seashore. That's too much for me on this live podcast here. But I'm not going to ask them their make and vehicle, right? They're making model of their car, right? So if you don't intend on using it in any kind of campaign or to better the customer service, then don't ask.
Yeah, and because we see that the more fields that you ask, the lower the probability that someone is going to submit that form. So 3 to 4 fields max, and you know, as Bruce was mentioning, let's be efficient and effective with the fields that we're asking. We're not asking to, you know, have them give us the world or the social security number, but your zip code, something that we can really start out with at this point.
You know, and I think that there's always that give and take. You know, anytime that you ask a customer or a user for some piece of information, I think what they get then as a result should be either equivalent or at least something that they can pinpoint later down the road and say, you know, when I gave this information, this is what happened as a result of that.
Yeah, quid pro quo.
Yeah.
Quo.
Yep. Yeah, that is a great point, Eric, is I think customers and ourselves just sitting at the table here, we are expecting companies, no matter their size, to have this omnipotent vision of our interactions, no matter where we interact with that company, be it offline or online. And they need to be able to personalize and have that white glove experience, no matter where I engage with them, either at a brick and mortar, when I buy a tchotchke, or their online store using the same email address or anything else like that.
Okay, so we talked about some of the data sources that you guys use, you know, interactions you have on your actual e-commerce website, but are there other external data sources that you guys look at when you're creating a personalization profile for your customers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, anything, like literally anything that can capture data, you try to create a system around that. And make sure it flows into the complementary systems where you're going to apply that personalization, right? Case in point, a lot of these e-commerce platforms now are reaching down into the offline, into the retail, right? They actually offer like Square, right? You've probably used Square, right? Mm-hmm. So that is knowing you were in my store, you purchased this, and now go to my website and you can, you know, look up your account. There's a lot of commercialization that's happening in that space.
So what you're saying, Bruce, is that if I happen to be at Victoria's Secrets and I was browsing the ladies' lingerie,
again,
you would know that.
Yeah, right. If they haven't put any kind of perimeter on you specifically, yes, we would know that.
Hypothetically, I was barred from the mall in this particular store.
Right,
the ankle bracelet might actually have the sensor that'll go off.
Right.
But yeah, there's some ways to take the idea is to connect that offline behavior to online engagement and integrating those two data sources to make that customer journey more succinct.
Yeah, things are becoming paperless, and the more paperless they get and more of those interfaces are in the hands of individuals within the organization, be it an associate on the sales floor with the tablet, you know, literally maybe taking your name or at least taking a survey. It might not even be you, but it's an understanding of who's asking what. Creepy looking guy asking for this lingerie at this time of day. Not to say that we're picking on Craig, but we can see, you can see patterns, you can develop these interfaces and have these mobile experiences ready in the field now with a lot of these platforms. The platforms themselves are opening up at, you know, exponential pace.
Yeah, and it's where the data points that are more difficult to connect are, you know, why did this person walk into my store? And then after they leave, are they ever going to come back? And those are questions that especially brick and mortar location owners ask themselves all the time. So it's how do we use that in-store behavior, track that data, attribute it to an individual so we can then tie that to their digital behavior as well. And that's those are some fun projects that we do enjoy working on.
So can you guys go even further and tie in data you might collect from direct mail or, you know, I don't know, phone solicitation? Does it go that far?
Yeah. And there's these platforms today, as Bruce was alluding to earlier, they're opening up their APIs to allow us to tap into other data. And, you know, some of the platforms out there have, you know, triggered functionality to send out that traditional mail. So to shoot a personalized postcard based off of your most recent visit to a vet. And I actually got one of those yesterday, a reminder that you know, one of my dogs needs to go in for a booster for a vaccination. So that's something that is personalized to me. Even had a photo of my dog on the cover of it, so or on this one side of it. So that is a personalized message to me as a reminder, and it's something that I'm now going to go back to them to get that shot.
So all of this data collection, both, you know, either online, offline, direct mail, a lot of it sounds really involved. And I think anytime there's a high level of involvement or a high level of engagement, there's also a sense of the time needed. And I think that, you know, I go back to the famous philosopher, you know, Tony Danza once said, time is money, Angela. So can you talk to us a little bit about the involvement, and whether it be from a budget perspective or a time and resources perspective, to get something like this started?
Yeah, if I can try to offer a word of encouragement and sort of a pep talk, is it's you first ask yourselves the question, say, man, it would be really cool if we did X. Put it on paper, send it to somebody, right? Say, how do I get this done, right? And then literally, it could be a matter of a month, it could be a week. It depends on what you want to start with. Some of these platforms, you may be sitting there as a marketer and say, hey, I've got this CRM system, I've got this email marketing system over here, and I also have got my loyal and trusted IT staff over here. And it's almost like they're sitting at the dance by themselves, not talking to each other, where, hey, let's get together. This is what I want to happen. How do I make it happen? A lot of these platforms can paint that picture for you really quickly. Other cases, you might have to create some other connections to make it happen. But to that point, Eric, it's I think a lot of people are sitting on the sidelines right now because of that fear that, oh, this is going to be a huge investment. There's no way I could prove ROI on it. I don't want to take the chance.
And just to jump back into something you said, when you mentioned connections, you're not specifically talking about the systems connecting to one another. You're talking about connecting to resources that have the knowledge or industry experts or platform experts. Is that what you mean by connections? Or
I'd say both. Okay. It's connecting internally with the different teams. It's bringing the right folks into the rooms. And it's also connecting those data points. And one thing that we certainly stress with ourselves internally and our clients is data hygiene and, you know, a data system of record where all that information is dumping into. And we want to make sure that we are connecting things in an appropriate way, and we, you know, aren't going to be forcing two formats together where it looks this way in one system and this way in another system. How do we, you know, make all these pieces come together nicely? So, yeah, it's touching base both, you know, human to human and data point to data point.
So a lot of what we've talked about, I get that it makes for a more enjoyable experience. You call me by name when I come to your site. You offer me things that might be of interest to me based on things you know about me. But when you get down to the, you know, to brass tacks, when I'm there at my cart ready to check out, does personalization, can it put me over that hump? Can it really affect purchase behavior too?
Yeah. Well-timed discount coupon code in the email inbox, or maybe say a beacon activated push notification to an iPhone while you're in the store itself.
Secret. I don't know what that means, but it sounds super sci-fi.
It sounds really, yes.
Beacon activated notification.
Yeah, it's not Star Trek.
No.
It is stuff that is on the horizon. Mm-hmm. It's stuff that, what is it, Cartwheel? I think that's the Target. Yep. Cartwheel. My wife anecdotally said she got an email saying, hey, honey, I saved $400-some by using Cartwheel this year with Target. I said, wait, great. I had no idea. So, you know, good or bad of it, it's, you know, I can't imagine how many, you know, clearance clothes that we got for that. But these are things that do lead to more sales.
Yeah, it's no longer just in-aisle advertising. It's we can hit you with the right message at the right time and you being the right person because you're standing there physically, or with an e-commerce card. If you've already got your items in the card, then hopefully personalization worked to get them there. Then it's at that point that you get out of the way and allow the person to finish that process. That's another point that we certainly stress in our article, that once you get the items in the cart, give them a thumbnail of that product that they added in there just to put their mind at ease. I did add the right thing. It's okay. And then let them go through the process as easy as possible. No more ads, no more offers. Just we don't want to get them distracted. We all have got ADHD nowadays, and we can
Wait,
run off.
What'd you say, Kyle? Yeah, wasn't paying attention.
Squirrel. So we just let them get through the process, and that's then we can circle back with them after we collected that customer data.
So are you saying, without saying it, Kyle, that it's just as important for brands to know when to jump in and when to, for lack of a better phrase, interfere with folks' lives, and then also when to know not to do that?
Precisely, We don't want to be interruptive. We want to be relevant and add context. And that's the cornerstone to personalized marketing and relationship marketing. It's content marketing with context. It's the right message in the right situation to the right person.
So along those lines, in terms of the right message and the right context, now, Bruce mentioned something earlier about in-store behavior, and I think that there's a fine line between how personal you can get with personalization. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to want to say, hey, I saw you in the tampon aisle, and you jammed one up your nose for some reason. Are you interested in these over these? So do you have any opinions on where that fine line is between how personal to get without being invasive?
I mean, there's organizations like we'll use Amazon that they've put things together like their subscription model where they can send you things on a consistent basis when you need them. Or you can take a step back and you can have your dash button where, you know, it's I've chosen this brand as my toilet paper exclusive provider. And so I'm going to click that there. So that's taking a step back. And they're not crossing over the line to say, I'm listening and you're talking about having to go to the bathroom and I'm sending you toilet paper because you have your Amazon Echo. And we just got one in the office and Eric and I were talking earlier about how we're afraid that it's listening to us and we start shipping us toilet paper. But now that's a possible case.
Why do all our podcasts end up talking about the bathroom?
It's a circle of life, I guess.
Or we ran out of cups for the kegerator and we needed some of those. We'll talk about put it that way.
I guess try to come back from that. The toilet talk is focus on the golden rule. You know, as you would want to be treated, treat others as a company. And if you can, see yourself experiencing your company's service and customer service and how you would want to interact, I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah, so maybe use some common sense that there's going to be some topics that are just, they're going to be sensitive, right? Mm-hmm. Be it bathroom behaviors or lady stuff or...
like hair barrettes?
Yes, hair barrettes and pillow fights. And but other topics probably, less sensitive, like, your favorite brand of, fried chicken, right? That people probably aren't going to be as sensitive about that.
Yeah. Like I have a funny example. I have a sign hanging up our front door that says that solicitors are welcome, but we charge $20 a minute for them to talk to us, to pitch their goods, religion, services, any of those things. And, businesses now have a lot of those no soliciting signs, and that's they don't want to be interrupted. They're already along this journey that they're going on, and they're not welcoming you to come in. And so this is not interrupted. This is marketing with a magnet rather than a sledgehammer.
Nice. Yeah. So I guess
is that trademarked by any chance?
I'm writing that down.
Possibly. It will be after this.
I'm filing the paperwork.
So it sounds like really what it boils down to is personalization can streamline the process, make it feel more comfortable and easier. And probably the best personalization is one that's not in your face, right? I imagine that if I'm in the sales process and I'm like, how do they know that about me, that's going to be jarring and maybe take me out of the process instead of guide me down the path towards purchase?
Yeah, it's organic. You're talking to your neighbor or friend about making a purchase rather than a salesman banging down your front door.
All right. I think we have thoroughly covered this topic. Thanks to Kyle and Bruce for coming in, talking to us about personalization. And again, this topic is covered in our Trends mid-year publication, available now at thundertech.com/trends. You can download your own copy. And I believe to do so, we are asking a few questions and gathering some data from people. So
only relevant ones.
Yes.
Nothing bathroom related.
Maybe your favorite color.
Nothing, yes.
But that is related.
But yeah, that's a good example of us practicing what we preach. So if you're interested in hearing more about this topic or any of the other topics that we're covering, again, go to thundertech.com/trends. Check out the publication for yourself. If you're dying to have a print version of it, go to our website, thundertech.com, and reach out, and we can get you a print version. And finally, if you like this podcast, we could certainly use your subscription. Go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you purchase your podcast and subscribe to ours. We'd love to hear from you. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks.